Healthcare is on its way to becoming the biggest issue in economic policy. There are two reasons for this. One is that healthcare is growing as a share of the economy. About 50 years ago, healthcare might have been less than 5% of GDP. That is, less than 5% of the total value of goods and services in the economy each year. Now in the United States, healthcare is approaching 15% of GDP. And there are some forecasts that it will be within 15 or 20 years even higher than that, maybe over 20% of GDP. That is, over one-fifth of all the goods and services in the economy will be healthcare. So it's becoming a big part of the economy. The second reason that it is becoming important as a policy issue is that there are powerful arguments on both sides of the debate of how much government should be involved in healthcare. That is, there are powerful arguments that government should be very involved in healthcare, and there are equally powerful arguments that government should be less involved in healthcare. I'm going to start talking about the issue of government involvement by talking about an example that is due to Milton Friedman, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, very noted economic teacher. And his example goes like this. You see this table where there are four ways of buying a coat. And what I'm asking you to do is match the scenario with the outcome. That is, there are four possible outcomes, four scenarios, and they're not necessarily lined up with each other, and you should pick the right letter that matches the outcome to the scenario. So the four scenarios are: you could buy the coat yourself, your parents give you a credit card and tell you to buy a coat, a friend buys you a coat, and the government buys you a coat. And the possible outcomes are that you buy the right coat but pay the wrong price. That is, you don't shop carefully for the best price. Another outcome is you get the wrong coat at the right price. That is, you shop carefully, or someone shops carefully to get the right price, but doesn't get the coat that you want. Then there's the right coat, right price, and wrong coat, wrong price. So take a moment and try to put the right letter into the right scenario so that you match the scenario with the outcome. If you want to, pause the lecture while you figure out which letter to match with which scenario. Okay, the point of this exercise is to explain in really simple terms, again, Friedman's a great teacher, the efficiency of the private sector. And his point would be that when you buy yourself the coat, you get the right coat at the right price. But with all the other scenarios, you don't get the right coat at the right price. In particular, when the government pays for something, the government doesn't know which coat you want and doesn't have the incentive to shop around for the best coat. That's kind of a Friedman's metaphor for what's wrong with having the government provide a service, or a good or a service. And so when it's applied to healthcare, the theory is that when government pays for healthcare, we will end up spending too much, and we will not end up making the optimal choices. That government will start defining what healthcare is and what choices can be made, so that our choices are not optimal, and then we have no incentive to conserve on costs. So that's the concern of government paying for healthcare. Let me just lay out in simplest terms three scenarios for paying for healthcare. Starting from the left to most individualistic, over on the right to most collective. So you have self, that means you pay for all your healthcare yourself. Then there's private insurance, which is kind of in the middle. And then there's government insurance, in which the government provides for healthcare. So examples of self-paying healthcare are things like health savings accounts, which is an idea to have people save money in special tax advantaged accounts and then use that money to pay for health care. Private insurance, there's both individual and corporate. Most people who have private insurance in this country have insurance that's paid for by the company. Some of us go out as individuals and buy health insurance. And then the most largest government programs for health insurance are Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare covers the elderly, and Medicaid is supposed to cover people who are poor. Overall, paying for health care yourself is most efficient. That's Milton Friedman's argument that you have the incentive to shop for the best price and to pick what's most appropriate for you. On the other hand, paying for health care yourself is risky and punishes the poor and the sick. If you're going to be responsible for your own health care, then there's always the chance that you will end up with a really expensive disease or injury and suffer a real loss in your standard of living as a result of that. Also, when people pay for health care themselves, inevitably the poor get less quality health care, and the sick end up being poor and end up having to pay a much larger share of their incomes for health care. So that brings up the idea of having the government step in to reduce risk and inequality. If the government took care of all of health care, then presumably you wouldn't have to face the risk of having a huge health care expense, and you wouldn't have the inequality of access that you would have in a private system. That is, poor people and sick people would have just as much access to the health care system as anybody else. But what that does is that gets the government involved in defining what's an eligible illness and what's an appropriate treatment. For example, should erectile dysfunction be something that the government pays for? Should facelifts be something that the government pays for? Should obesity treatments be something that the government pays for? And drawing that line becomes critical in how in how the government involvement works. You'll have whoever has a proposed treatment for these illnesses lobbying the government heavily to define them as illnesses and to approve of their treatments. So one way that some countries deal with health care is they actually have a mix of self and government. That is, most people in most circumstances in a country like Canada or Great Britain have government-paid health care, National Health Service. But when they really need some special care or just want to get treatment faster than they would otherwise, then it reverts to self-care. That is, they go outside the government system. In the case of Canada, often they'll come to the United States. And the reason is that the government ends up rationing health care. Doctors may not be well paid by the government, so their doctors are not as available. People don't like to have to wait in long lines for doctors. We took a vacation in Canada a few years ago, and we stayed on Prince Edward Island, and the owner of the place where we stayed told a story about how he needs to be regularly monitored by a cardiologist. But when he moved to Prince Edward Island, he was put in the back of the line for a cardiologist, and it would have taken him 3 years to see a cardiologist. And those are the things that under government health care become very stressful for people. Another issue that economists focus on with government health care is that when you use taxes rather than saving to pay for health care, it hurts the economy. It hurts the economy in two ways. One is that if people were saving to pay for their health care, then that saving would be used to finance investments in capital so that the economy would accumulate more productive assets. but taxes don't accumulate those kinds of productive assets. The second reason is that taxes provide a disincentive for people to work. We talked about that before with Social Security, that if taxes go up, that drives people out of the public labor market, of the observable labor market, and drives them into the underground economy or into do-it-yourself work. So that taxes reduce the efficiency in the economy, and higher tax rates drive people out of the market economy. So for those reasons, if you could have people save for health care, that would be preferable. Another reason to have people save for health care is that a lot of health care is inevitable. My guess is that a lot of your parents have had treatment by an orthopedist within the past 3 years, just because we're reaching the age where we're more likely to get injured. And we're a generation that seemed to like to keep exercising, so we did a lot of jogging, played a lot of sports. And when you're our age, playing sports and jogging tends to lead to orthopedic injuries. So furthermore, we're going to get older, and as we hit our 60s and 70s, we're bound to be hit with the illnesses that occur in people who are in their 60s or 70s. Some of us are going to get cancer, some of us are going to get heart disease, and all sorts of minor ailments that require treatment. And the point is that when illness, or some degree of illness, is inevitable, you don't really insure against it. What you really should do is be doing is saving for it. So to the extent that people inevitably are going to incur medical expenses as they get older, they really ought to be saving for those expenses rather than forcing other people to pay for those expenses through taxes. So those are some of the issues, pro and con on the government. It seems impossible to force people to pay for all their health care themselves because of the way it punishes the poor and the sick and puts people at risk. By the same token, it seems impossible or undesirable to have the government pay for all health care because that would make taxes too high and saving too low. So what are some solutions for that? Well, one thought is, why not just have the government pay only for emergency care, only pay for the big risks, the big injuries, and so on? Well, the problem with that is that you don't want people to skip on preventive care. And so if you say, well, we'll pay for emergencies, but we won't pay for preventive care, you're kind of skewing the incentives against people getting preventive care. Or they might go to, if you pay for any emergency room visit regardless of cause, then people will go to the emergency room for minor illnesses. So it's not as simple as just saying, well, let's have the government only pay, if you break your arm or if you contract cancer or whatever. It's a little bit more complicated than that. And another issue is that for poor people, it's the problems are not limited to emergencies. A big reason why poor people are less healthy and have much lower expected lifespans is that there's generally poor prenatal and postnatal care in poorer communities. That is the pregnant women don't live as healthy lives, don't get as much care, and their babies after they're born, poor women's babies after they're born, don't get as good care. And if the mother isn't well treated while she's pregnant, and the baby isn't well treated right after it's born, that's really what causes most of the illness, especially illness that leads to early death. So the point there is that poor people don't just need emergency care. They need much more availability of just basic care, especially basic prenatal and postnatal care. So the point is, you can't limit government's involvement to only paying for emergency care. It also needs to deal with some preventive care, particularly prenatal and postnatal care. Another approach to trying to limit government's involvement to just what's essential to reduce the risk and uncertainty and the sort of unfairness that healthcare costs have the highest burden on the poor and the sick. For dealing with that is something called mandatory catastrophic health coverage. The idea there is that, well, let me explain catastrophic health coverage first. Ordinary healthcare coverage might be a $3,000 annual premium and a $3,000 deductible. That means that the $3,000 deductible means that you have to pay the first $3,000 of healthcare expenses, but after that, the insurance company picks up the expenses. With catastrophic coverage, you would pay a lower premium but have a higher deductible. So if you had only $2,000 of healthcare expenses, with ordinary coverage, you would be out the $3,000 premium, but you would not meet the deductible. And with catastrophic coverage, you'd be out the $1,000 premium, and again, you would not meet the deductible. If you ran into $5,000 worth of expenses, with ordinary coverage, you'd pay the $3,000 premium. You would pay the $3,000 deductible, but you would get $2,000 in coverage. With catastrophic coverage, with $5,000 in expenses, you would pay all the expenses because you still would not meet the deductible, plus you'd pay the $1,000 premium. So if your expenses are more than $5,000, in this scenario, you would be better off with ordinary coverage, but with less than $5,000 expenses, it'll end up being less expensive with catastrophic coverage. So the idea of catastrophic coverage is that you are protected against really big expenses, but you save if your expenses are small, and you pay if your expenses are somewhere in the middle, in between very small and very big, then you don't do as well as with ordinary coverage. And so one idea is to make this idea of catastrophic coverage mandatory, the thinking being that people don't seem to get catastrophic coverage, even though they really ought to. So you'll see stories of young people hit with surprising illnesses, because when you're young, you don't expect to get cancer or heart disease or those kinds of illnesses. And so people are surprised by those illnesses, and they didn't have any healthcare coverage at all, and they really get slammed. And the idea is, well, let's just force them to get catastrophic, at least the catastrophic healthcare coverage, so that they have the coverage in case of the really big illnesses. One advantage of having mandatory catastrophic healthcare coverage is that, as opposed to having the government pay for any and all pay for emergency care, is that an insurance company might give you an incentive to engage in prevention. That is, you might get a discount on your premium for catastrophic coverage if you're a non-smoker, for example, because the insurance company knows it's less likely to have to make a high payment to someone who's a non-smoker, so that the incentives are aligned better with something like catastrophic coverage than there are for something where the government reimburses you for emergency care. The main problem with catastrophic health insurance, as our family has found, as my family has found, is that once you've been diagnosed with an expensive illness, then catastrophic coverage becomes expensive. That is, if we want to shift insurance companies right now, because we've got a couple of serious illnesses in the family, any new company is going to look at that and charge us a huge amount for catastrophic coverage. So meanwhile, the company that we have keeps jacking up the premiums. Now, in theory, they're not allowed to raise the premiums just on us personally. That is, they're only allowed to raise them because of the overall cost of the cohort of people that it's covering. That's just a matter of law. If insurance were deregulated, they could just raise the rates on us personally. But in any case, so we're finding that the catastrophic coverage, even with that $10,000 deductible, we're paying closer to $10,000 annual premiums. And so, right now, I would basically prefer to pay no insurance at all. We might as well just pay, self-insure because the catastrophic coverage is so high, except that people without insurance, if you walk into a hospital, let's say we took a vacation in California and somebody became ill or got into an accident, and we walked in without an insurance card, we wouldn't be treated very well. And so we're kind of stuck there. And but the point is that catastrophic coverage doesn't really cover, it only covers high expenses, but what it doesn't deal with is the fact that when you come down with a serious chronic illness, you're going to have expenses year after year, and that means that your insurance costs can just go up, and you have no way to switch insurance companies if one insurance company starts raising its rates on you. So that brings up another policy idea, which is to have government provide subsidies for catastrophic insurance, so-called catastrophic reinsurance. That's something that's in Senator Kerry's presidential platform, is the idea of having the government pay whenever a person's expenses go above, let's say, $50,000 a year. That way, the insurance companies would be less likely to turn away or charge really high premiums to people who have serious illnesses, because those serious illnesses, the big expenses, will be covered by the government. And so, the theory is then that private insurance will be more competitive. But overall, the United States is going to have to come to grips with this, because our current approach of private insurance, of having companies pay for it, is less and less tenable as people are more and more inclined to switch jobs. It was one thing in the 1950s, if you're going to spend the rest of your life working for General Motors or Procter and Gamble, to have your health insurance through the company. Now, when people are changing jobs every 2 years, and even changing careers every 5 or 10 years, the thought that you have to give up your health insurance just because you change your job or change careers, it's just not workable anymore. So our current our the American system of private insurance is breaking down. We have to find another way to bring private insurance together, or to switch to self or switch to government. So what I would suggest you do is think more about these issues, because it's very complicated, and I'll give you a lot more articles to read in the announcements. And we'll discuss this more next time.